I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Conventional sports history has it that boxer Jack Johnson was the first great African-American athlete. But that distinction might go to Marshall Walter Taylor, better known as Major Taylor. At the dawn of the 20th century, Taylor was an international champion of the popular sport of cycling. Todd Balfe is a cycling enthusiast. He's made it his mission to bring Major Taylor's story into the 21st century. He's also written the book Major, A Black Athlete, A White Era, and the Fight to Be the World's Fastest Human Being. Balfe spoke about Major Taylor with NPR's Tony Cox.
Taylor and Johnson are an interesting comparison because I think on face value, a lot of people have heard of Jack Johnson, who really caused waves wherever he went and whatever he did, whereas Taylor preceded him. And in fact, Johnson refers to Taylor, you know, and says that because of Taylor's notoriety as a bike racer, he actually, before he took up boxing, he took up bike riding and only took up boxing after he crashed his bicycle and realized that it really wasn't the sport for him. So, you know, juxtaposing Taylor and Johnson, Taylor was a much different character. You know, on face value, he was modest, he was religious, he seemed to be somewhat more passive than a Johnson. And yet, I think that what's been mistaken in this sort of view and comparing the two is that they were both deeply principled and deeply devoted to their principles.
Did Taylor get to the very pinnacle of his sport? And if so, give us some sense of just how much of a factor in terms of bicycle riding worldwide he was
right
at the height of his career.
It's really astounding what Taylor was able to accomplish in a very short amount of time. If you think that really he started professional racing at Madison Square Garden in 1896 in a 6-day races, an event that he was not well suited for as a sprinter, but it was a way to get his name out there. By 1899, he was world champion. By 1901, he was traveling through all the European capitals and was being paraded around Paris as the American champion, a superstar. And I think that's where the division lies between Taylor and some of his black contemporary athletes of that time period. Taylor broke through onto the international scene. And he was, and in fact, today, if you were to look into the kind of research and attention that Taylor's legacy has held, you know, you're seeing more material coming out of countries like Australia or France, Germany, places where he raced and was renowned as the superstar that he was.
When he was in the United States and at the pinnacle as a racer, how was race an issue for him in dealing with the American public?
Race was an ever-present issue for Taylor. You know, it manifested itself in many different ways. He was not recognized as a member of the League of American Wheelmen, for example. He was prohibited, banned from racing in Indianapolis and in Indiana when he was a young man, which forced him to relocate to Worcester, Massachusetts. You know, promoters were very, very reluctant, especially in the South, to have him in a race field where he would, quote-unquote, humiliate the field by beating all the white rivals put in front of him. You know, the obstacles put before him because of the color of his skin were just innumerable. So you saw at that time period in the early 1900s, this sort of, you know, fleeing or forced fleeing of athletes going to other countries. It happened in horse racing. It happened in boxing, as we all know, even with Jack Johnson. And it happened with Taylor. And it is the reason why Taylor's name is not known in a league with Jack Johnson or Jackie Robinson or others, because his fame really came abroad. It did not come the way it could have happened or should have happened in America.
What happened after his career ended?
Taylor's career really peaked in 1904 when he beat his longtime rival Floyd McFarlane and won what was really considered the world championship in Australia, which is ironic, since that's also where Jack Johnson would be victorious a few years later. But after his racing career completed, you know, here was a man who had gained wealth. He had quite a little nest egg to sit on. He'd gained notoriety around the world. And yet he had to then come back into American life as something other than an athlete. And it all went wrong from him right from the start. The money that he had saved, he invested in businesses that went belly up. It wasn't a matter of him blowing money on wine, women, and song. It was just, he even tried to educate himself and go to college, and he was not accepted at Worcester Polytech Institute, which is fairly hard to believe given his fame at the time. And so it was one frustration after another, and eventually his life really crumbled around him. He separated from his wife, he separated from his child, and he wandered off to Chicago where he tried to sell his autobiography, and eventually died penniless in 1932.
We've already talked about how in American culture, particularly in African-American history, there is not a great mention of Major Taylor. And yet, at the same time, here a century later, his name is beginning to resurface with organizations like the IMO Major Taylor Team, which I guess operates somewhere in the Midwest. Bicyclists, particularly African-American bicyclists, are now competing in his memory in some cases, are they not?
They are. People are attaching to Major Taylor in a surprisingly powerful way. I think that what's going on there is people are looking for these examples, looking for heroes, looking for people who did something extraordinary. And Taylor certainly qualifies.
Todd, thank you so much. Job well done. We appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
That was NPR's Tony Cox talking with Todd Balfe. Balfe is the author of Major, A Black Athlete, A White Era, and The Fight to Be the World's Fastest Human Being.